With the state of today's economy, it's more important than ever to invest in products that last for years to come. As the seasons shift and get cooler, make sure your closet is stocked with durable layers that stand the test of time from American Giant. American Giant's clothes work harder and are wearable season after season. Their greatest hoodie ever made is made from the highest quality materials that are cut and sewn right here in the United States. So you're investing right back in your local community. Choosing American Giant means taking a stand for American manufacturing and hardworking Americans, something other mega corporations don't care about. From fleece to knit, all in a range of colors for versatile daily wear, American Giant delivers everyday pieces designed for everyday life. Feel the difference of quality, made-to-last clothes from American Giant. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
I'm John Batchelor with David Petrucia. The book is 1920, the year of the six presidents. The six presidents contain decades. We're talking about the early moments of the rise of Teddy Roosevelt right after the Civil War and becoming prominent in the 1890s in New York and rising to the vice presidency because, of course, they wanted to get rid of him. He was a troublesome progressive Democrat, Republican governor in New York. And the bosses found him extremely uncomfortable making, especially Tammany Hall. He becomes president, and then in dispute with Woodrow Wilson, who wins because Teddy Roosevelt breaks up the party, and we get into the 1920s, and now we're extending all the way into the 1930s. Hoover is known as the great engineer. He was so effective as not being a partisan that neither party could decide on him in 1920. He will become president because Cal Coolidge chooses not to run again, and Hoover runs on the Republican line. What made him move towards the Republicans? Had he always been a Republican, David?
Well, he'd been a Republican of sorts. He might have jumped to the Democrats, but he makes a statement at one point that he takes a look at the Democratic Party, and it's like, ugh. I don't want these racist Southerners, these wild ass progressives in the Midwest, they're just too radical for me. Or these crooks in the big cities. I just don't feel comfortable with these guys. I'm going to stick with the Republican Party. And in 1920, it being a Republican year, maybe he just decided to see which way the wind was blowing.
He goes into the administration and he's very successful in the administration, known as the great engineer, a man who gets things done and is very systematic, modern, we would call it at the time, the modern way of doing things. Yet his personality is not warm in public, completely unlike Woodrow Wilson. Much more, in fact, it struck me how close Hoover and Coolidge strike everybody from the first time they meet them. They can't read them. Their faces are not giveaways. Is that how they were regarded at the time, David?
I mean, yeah, Hoover is not elected to anything before the presidency. He's not a standard politician, and that's going to hurt him when, you know, the rubber meets the road in the Great Depression, where I have a line in the book where he may have been a great humanitarian, but he did not appear to be a great human. You know, even maybe Coolidge would have in his sort of cold persona, would have been able to rally the public more that this is what we have to do and we're going to get out of this, et cetera. And Hoover somehow misses all the right keys on the piano. I mean, just does not do it where Franklin Roosevelt, coming from great wealth, the irony, he comes from great wealth. Hoover comes from great poverty. And Hoover cannot appeal to the common man like Franklin Roosevelt can.
Roosevelt becomes governor in 28, and in 32, he confronts his Democratic Party, especially Al Smith, who feels betrayed by Roosevelt in 32. But thanks to the very hard work of Eleanor and Louis Howe and his other famous, everyone around FDR is famous. Missy LeHand, all of them are famous. He becomes the man who saves the nation from the Great Depression is the reputation, then becomes Dr. Win the War. However, you're reading, David. Is this the same Roosevelt we were talking about in 1920?
No, he's much more calculating, and his calculations are sounder politically. People have said that, you know, being immobilized with the polio, which comes out in 1921, he has a lot more time to sit and think about things. And also, Francis Perkins, his Secretary of Labor, says that he was able to empathize more with human suffering and to be more of a well-rounded person because of his own suffering at that point.
Yes, there was a habit he had that I never realized how it would come across incorrectly, of throwing his head up. And that upset people in 1920. I take it didn't continue to upset them once he was on the campaign trail, probably because of the mitigation of the polio. He didn't look arrogant when a man has braces as heavy as those.
Well, he has to position himself on that platform and hold himself up all the time, you know, creating that illusion of mobility. Also, what happens between 1920 and 1932 and 1936 is radio and talking pictures, where he's able to communicate so much more effectively than he would have been able to under the old system. And he's a master of that. In my book on the 1936 campaign, we talk about how he would get newsreels of his talk or radio recordings, not so much out of egotism, but to listen and correct what he was going to say, his delivery. As masterful as he was, he realized he could be better.
Two things: Prohibition and the League of Nations. Prohibition first. FDR, did he understand that Prohibition had to be removed, that it had to go?
Not exactly. I don't think anyone in 1920 thought it would go. I mean, you could modify it. And there was the polling in the 20s was very overwhelmingly for modification, but not for repeal. And let's face it, no amendment had really been repealed up at that point. And to do that would have been almost impossible. So he doesn't get around to coming out for repeal until January of 1932 in a speech in Buffalo. And this is after he's been governor of the very wet state of New York and a protege of Al Smith for 2 years.
Prohibition is one big story, and they will celebrate the day that Prohibition is abolished. I believe the Democrats met in Chicago in 32, and it was a wet convention. All conventions are wet, but this was a noticeably wet convention. The other one is the League of Nations. Is the United Nations the League of Nations in FDR's mind? Is he following through on Wilson's intention?
I think he is. I think it's difficult to think of what the big differences are, except he doesn't make the mistake. Well, he doesn't make the mistake of not involving the Republicans. You know, he brings in, even though the Republicans don't have control of Congress, he's willing to consult with them. He also reaches across the political aisle to an unusual extent in his career. Think of the people he has around him. He has, you know, Henry Stimson and Frank Knox. And even Francis Perkins had once been a Republican, his first Secretary of the Treasury. Right. Wooden was a Republican. So he's willing to cross the aisle and to build a liberal, progressive Democrat, progressive Republican coalition. That's actually one of his goals.
Which Wilson did not do for the Versailles Treaty. And therein FDR learns from the tragedy of Woodrow Wilson's presidency. David Petrucha. The book is 1920, The Year of the Six Presidents. I'm John Batch.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.